Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's Monday, the 9th of September. It's just gone 7 minutes past 10. You're listening to 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'll be taking you through today's show. We've got a fantastic show for you today, something that is incredibly close to my heart. So we're currently in World Suicide Prevention Month, and tomorrow is World Suicide Prevention Day. And in my drinking days, when I was in full-blown addiction, I came close several times to taking my own life. I had sat on my couch with my gun in my mouth, asking God to give me the courage to take my own life, to kill myself. That is something that has always been challenging me for me to talk about because of the relationship I believe I have with Hashem, and understanding that my life is a gift, but also understanding the incredible darkness in those moments and where our thoughts aren't really our own. So we have two very special guests. Firstly, we have Professor Seth Cooper, MD, and he is past president of the Psychological Society of South Africa. And then we also have author Hundalazi Dangane. Did I get that right?
Vulitsani.
You know, and I was practicing it before the show, and then just, you know, fear takes over. And Vulitsani is author of 3 books, Madusha's Magical Superpowers, Brighter Days Ahead, and Navigating the Storm, A Parent's Journey Through Mental Health. So let us have your questions for our guests. We're chatting mental health today. We're chatting suicide prevention. Let us have your questions or comments on 061-895-1019. We'll be back with our guests after these adverts.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday morning, and it's time for the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm your host, and I'm joined in studio by Professor Seth Cooper, the past president of the Psychological Society of South Africa, and author Vulitsani Dangane. Did I get it? Yay! Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. We're chatting about suicide prevention and mental health. And I'd like to get started, I think, with Vulitsani, just to talk about your upcoming book, what that's about, what you've experienced, and then I'd like to get the professor's input on that as well. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Just my background, I am a mother to a now 18-year-old. My daughter, the first time that she attempted suicide was at 7 years old. And since then until now, she's gone through multiple suicide attempts. I'm grateful and very fortunate that she is still with us. And for me, going through that journey, what I discovered is, firstly, that I did not know what to do, and I found it very difficult to find the resources. I think we assume when you have a medical aid that somehow you'll go to the doctor and it will all be figured out. I've learned during this period that while they are medical professionals, I will see them for 45 minutes to an hour. I have to go home where I need to be on 24 hours suicide watch without knowing what to do or how to look after my, you know, my daughter. So the books that I've authored basically came from that experience. I started by writing A Parent's Journey, which for me is my journey as a parent. How have I navigated these challenges? And what were some of the challenges I came across? And also, what were some of the helpful tools which I'm hoping to share with other parents, but also with other caregivers, teachers, and hopefully policymakers too, in that throughout this journey, I also realized that what we currently have as a mental health benefit through our medical aid only allows us 30 days. And after the 30 days for the rest of the year, you have to figure it out on your own. I've also learned that the education system, there aren't many schools that can accommodate a child who is struggling as much as my daughter is struggling. I've had to take her out of, mainstream school and keep her at home where she attends online schools. And so that's the first book. The second book, it's aimed at teens because I found that the most challenging time was from the time that she hit puberty, where literally I was on 24 hours suicide watch. And the name of the book is Brighter Days Ahead. And that I'm trying to encourage or bring in some hope to kids and parents of the teenagers who might be struggling, thinking this is the end of the road, they can't think of things getting better. And the last book is for children to try and help them to develop the social, emotional skills so that they learn to talk about their feelings, they get comfortable talking about their feelings, and also provide a tool in the form of a book that will help parents to have the conversation with their young kids who do not understand why they are feeling sad and why they just don't have the energy to do things and activities.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Professor, to you, how is the state of our mental health in South Africa? Lizzie, thank you for joining us and for your time.
In one word, terrible.
Right.
Our state has dropped the ball on realizing that environmental, socioeconomic, and political factors do increase the rates of depression, and related to that is anxiety.
Right.
We opened up with you talking about suicide, and I don't have a current rate, but just before COVID, the countries with the highest suicide rates, of the 10 highest suicide rates, three of them are in Southern Africa. Number one leading the world list at the time is Lesotho.
Yes.
Number three is Eswatini, Swaziland. And number 10 is South Africa. Okay. There are various other countries like South Korea and smaller countries where it occurs. I should also point out that if we look beyond the 10 highest rates of suicide, the other countries, our neighboring countries, come in as well.
Right.
So there seems to be almost an epidemic in Southern Africa, including Botswana, Swaziland, Lesotho, South Africa. So the reasons for suicide are many. They range from individual experience to other kinds of impacts that the individual experiences in a society where they may not find that they are being catered for, they feel they are being left out of whatever is happening. For young children in particular, it can be something where you hear about suicide in a school or an attempted suicide, and the result is there is almost a scatter impact on those kids who know or knew that child.
Right.
So I'm pleased Bulitsane has outlined the struggles she's experienced in dealing with this, because we don't have the skills or the capacity to identify, to pick up, and to prevent suicide as an extreme form of illness.
Right.
Where we want to take our lives. There are many differences culturally, but this affects all countries, all cultures, all religions, genders, mm-hmm. and classes.
Right.
I should point out, though, that there tend to be more men who succeed in suiciding than women or females. Okay. And partly the reason is that females tend to speak about their issues, or it's noticeable that certain things are happening to them.
Right.
And the threat is taken more seriously than if it was Nicholas. Yeah, you know, Nicholas, you're a guy. You should be facing things.
Cowboys,
et cetera, et cetera,
yes.
You know?
Cowboys so, don't cry, basically.
Cowboys don't
Professor,
cry.
Professor, I'd like to continue with this point. We just need to go to an ad break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday, just gone, 22 minutes past 10. You are listening to 101.9 on Chai FM. We're chatting with Professor Suths Cooper, the past president of the Psychological Society of South Africa, and with author Will. Gee, I get it again. This is my dyslexia kicking in and my brain freezes. Vuletsane Dangale. There we go. So, someone who I've known for a very long time, and this is what happens to my brain. We're chatting about a very serious topic, suicide, and sort of also mental health in South Africa. Just before we went to break, the professor was sharing with us men have a higher successful suicide rate in South Africa, and we're really facing a mental health epidemic, almost, I would say, in Southern Africa, where we are really challenged. And one of the other points is that we are not seeing the support that we need, both from government healthcare and from the private sector, such as medical aids. So if I could touch on that point, back to you, Professor. 30 days on a medical aid, if you have the opportunity to have a medical aid, you know, why is that not enough? And also, where else are we lacking in the healthcare system?
Well, we tend to be using a biological medical model in our dealing with health. It's at a high professional level, and it tends to inform policy. If you look at the last attempts to create a better policy, they were at least 10 years ago. And
right.
There hasn't been a visible attempt from the state to deal with this. We don't have facilities that can deal with it. Practitioners, all practitioners, are not exposed to some of the issues that they should be picking up, from emergency frontline responders through to people in a hospital context, whether they are medical professionals or not. Our training is therefore deficient. We are not keeping tabs with the latest data, such as it's collected and reflected almost at least annually by major organizations like the World Health Organization.
Right. They fled for the umpteen years now. Depression has rising. Right? Yet, we have not done anything. During the COVID pandemic, the UN Secretary General pointed to the need for mental health.
Yes.
And during and post the pandemic, when we were left largely to our own devices, we tended to be imprisoned, if you like, in our little boxes where we stay. And that humanness, you know, we only become human through contact with other people.
Right.
Otherwise, we're not human. We're just another species, right? If you go basically to the ability to walk, if you have a child in Orange Grove who's taken out of there, left in a condition where that child does not see anybody walking, the likelihood of that child walking is low.
Right.
If that child is exposed to another behavior, like walking on all fours, that child will imitate that behavior.
Okay.
That child will not speak unless spoken to, and will learn language and cultural attributes through human contact. So we are who we are through others who make up our world at whatever levels, early childhood through to schooling, in the sports field, in the shuls, in the temples,
yes,
in the churches, in social settings. All of those are impacted by these factors. Now,
right,
if we look at why depression happens, it happens across, that whole syndrome can happen to the very rich and to the very poor.
Okay.
So you can be depressed. You can wake up this morning, Nicholas, and feel, you know, I just don't feel like getting up and driving to Chai FM this morning, and I'll just lie in bed. Okay? There could be just that reason. And if you don't recognize your behavior, it becomes ingrained. You become habituated to not doing something that you ought to be doing.
Right.
So, you know, the first thing I'm saying is awareness, making all of us aware at an early age that you can talk to somebody, right? In your listenership, it is a fairly defined belief and cultural group. And there are systems in place to catch you when you fall, as
yes,
it were. Right? However, so much affected are we by daily living issues that we tend, the adults in our environment especially, tend to ignore certain things, saying, oh, you know, it'll sort of, little Nicholas, you know, it's just acting, we'll deal with it, right? So sometimes, yes, he is acting out, but we should know why he's acting out. If he's withdrawn, coming back from school, withdrawn, or if his device is something that he is concentrating on overly or ignoring, there's something happening because he may hate it that he's being cancelled on X or one of the other silly platforms that exist, where othering happens, where because you grew up, I'm using you as an example, sorry, Nicholas, but if you grew up early wearing glasses, kids pick you out on that, you know? So, and kids are, look, it's not intended. There aren't filters that kids have. Actually, they shouldn't have filters because they can pick up danger as well.
Yes.
If you have that kind of being one with your environment and nature, right? So there are then those kids who gang up and say, oh, Nicholas wears glasses. We don't. We're the better guys. And if it's a mixed school with females, males, etc., it becomes even worse. Right? If it is a single-sex school, it also can become terrible. You know, we've heard what happens in Pretoria Girls' School and a few other places like that, for instance. So the point I'm making is we have not met our psychological well-being a priority.
Yes.
That is more important. You see, we reduce it to narrow mental health.
Yes.
And then you'll get a pill. You'll get one of the SSR, medications that only kick in after so many days, for instance. And then if you miss out on your 30 days, coming back, sorry for I didn't answer it right at the beginning, coming back to the 30-day period that some medical aides insist on, it is outrageous. Because if you go to the Council on Medical Schemes, you win the case.
Right.
Hopefully you've got better people than now. Because sometimes they tend to be in the pocket of big medical schemes who can bully you. You know, just like playground bullies, the big medical schemes can bully you. And if you're a practitioner who raises the issue, they can blacklist you and
yes.
so on. Now, we need to realize that the definition of health is physical, spiritual, mental health. It's all one.
Yes.
There's old data in the 1970s that shows that one in two people going to doctors' rooms don't have a physical etiology cause for why they're going in. It's socio-economic environment. You know, more and more environmental impacts. Remember, we had a gas blow up in the center of Johannesburg. We had a building that got burned down, etc. So all these things we see in real time.
Right.
We can use our devices on the radio and worse on television. We can see this stuff. Now, imagine, and in your community, the community that we're speaking with now, daily you confront what is happening in Gaza. What is, you know, this is happening, that is happening. Now, it gets to you. It must get to you
yes.
and impact how you view the world and whether you're sure about things, whether you fully yourself and can cope. Because in real time, we're seeing terrible things. And these impact on us. Whatever our views are on these kinds of issues, they do impact us psychologically.
Yes.
So unfortunately, our policymakers ignore that, and then we end up paying a huge cost because we could prevent it. You know, if these few factors like depression, anxiety, which are easy to identify,
right?
If young people are told, if you feel this, if you feel that, if you feel that, if you feel that, here, speak to teacher so-and-so, or speak to peer counselor so-and-so, you know? And it will go a long way when you identify this and the kids can identify the symptoms. You then can internalize it and are able to cope better. I'm a believer in prevention.
Yes.
Rather than coming right at the end when it's almost too late to intervene.
Professor, I'd like to touch on that point as well. And also get your input from our listeners. We're going to go. Oh, okay. So we've got that sorted. So just to carry on that point, I think we can't rely currently on the healthcare system within South Africa to step up. And as you said, 30 days is a ridiculous amount of time to support. So what, from your side, can we do? I love the concept of prevention. So, Professor, I'd like to hear from you. And then also, Vulidzani, I'd like to hear from you on your experience and how you've dealt with it? Because I see you nodding so much, echoing what the professor is saying, and you experienced it firsthand. So how do we deal with prevention first? What can we do to empower ourselves and others around us? I think you're the professor first.
Thank you, Prof. Look, you see what you did right at the beginning of the show.
Yes.
Is exemplary, because you're giving a real experience. You know, this happened to me. Now, how many in our congregations go through similar things because they can't meet the mortgage or whatever, right? So in particularly schools and in our places of worship, we need that opportunity for persons to understand the society, understand the now, to help you deal with not only the present, but the future. Help parents who, most parents, are caught up in their own story. When you're a young parent, especially, you know, and something happens and you get a child that's unexpected and fairly young, you become an adult quite quickly. And then you have a child who can be your sister sometimes. I'm giving you real life experiences here. And that impacts you because there can be mother-child competition, for instance, you right. know, and other issues. Or who needs to be mother? That question, right? So thankfully, we have, again, the culture, some good Yiddish mama out there, some good grandma who's going to say, the gogo who's going to say, come my child, I understand. And just that touch, that feeling, chicken soup, whatever, starts working. Now, many of us, especially when we're young adults and starting a family, are on a race. It's a rat race. It's a competition. It's internal to family. It is inter-family, inter-community, outside the community. People are on a rush. There isn't that pause to really have a sense of communion. Now, it's prescribed. In your culture, it's prescribed to have that state of repose and reflection on a Friday, late afternoon, into Sunday. And in that period, it gives you the opportunity to actually touch base with ourselves. Leave the problems of business, of work, etc. But how do we feel besides the reflection in terms of religion? It gives us that opportunity. That's why these things were created, so that we give us me time and you time and interact. So those are remarkable opportunities. In schools, we should be having prevention, psychosocial preparedness. Because when you speak psychological, you think ek is nie mal nie, I'm not mad, that kind of thing, you know? Because we all go through these things. And you can wake up this morning feeling depressed. You can end up in the evening on a high.
Right.
So and I'm not going into any diagnosis here, but the point is you can experience multiple emotions during the day depending on what happens, what you're impacted by, who's talking to you, who's not talking to you, how's work going, what's the home environment, what's the schooling environment, and right. the pressure the kid is put into. If we look at our universities, for instance, we're committing a massive crime. We're pushing kids into university as if that is the panacea, you know? And we're giving kids coming from their, whether they're wealthy, middle class, or lower. We're giving them money in their hands, which shouldn't
be. Yes, absolutely.
Because they don't know how to spend it. There are other ways that we can enable them. There are other ways that we can prepare them for a career, which may mean not going to university. But now it seems everything is, you want a job, go to university, study X, do business, study business.
Yes.
You know, you can get the best business degree in the world. If you haven't run a spaza shop, you're not going to make it in a larger world.
Absolutely, okay. Professor.
I know Bulatsane is eager to come in. So,
yeah, so just before, Rulisani, you do, we're just going to go to ad break and then we'll come back and hear your thoughts on this. But I just wanted to share the professor's comments on university. The staff at the universities really try incredibly hard. And I had the opportunity to work with CCDU at WITS. And you said so correctly, they're putting kids into university that don't really want to be there or know how to be there, particularly financially. So let's go to ads and we'll pick this up after our ad break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to you to manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, better health starts here. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. We're chatting mental health, and we are focusing on suicide as it's World Suicide Prevention Month. Let us have your comments or questions for our guests on 061-895-1019. That's the studio WhatsApp number. Vulitsani, we wanted to come back to you to share your thoughts, because I saw as the professor was speaking, you were nodding so many times in acknowledgement and having experienced exactly what the professor was talking about.
Absolutely. So a couple of points just to echo what Prof said. My child spent most of the time at school, and through our journey, I actually realized that the education system is actually not geared to look after kids who struggle with mental health. For example, her teacher called her a crybaby because she could not express her emotion. That was the reaction she was getting from the teacher. And as a result, the other students in the class also started calling her a crybaby, which made it very difficult for her to want to be at school. Secondly, the community. There's lack of awareness in our communities about mental health. In fact, we don't talk about it. As an example, I kept it a secret that we were experiencing these challenges. I kept it a secret from my family, because I did not know how I was going to explain it to them. Somehow there's, the narrative that, you're crazy, or you need to go to church, pray, or go to a sangoma. I mean, those are some of the responses I had in the few instances where I opened up to either a family member or a friend, with the hope that I would get the support. Instead, I was told to change my diet to a vegan diet. Just the lack of awareness and lack of information around mental health. I always use an example of if a child struggles with asthma and they are on an asthma pump, if they're having an asthma attack, we don't say, let's pray for the child. We make sure that they have access to an asthma pump and also access to medical professionals to assist. But when it comes to mental health, my daughter lost her best friend because she was having psychotic episodes. Her best friend basically told her that she's demon-possessed. So now you have a child who's rejected at school in our community, who lost her friends, and she doesn't understand why she is the one who's struggling. And I know that this is just one of the examples. I think about people who, either show symptoms of dementia back in my village, where they will be labeled as witches because they find themselves in the middle of, in other people's houses that they don't even know. So there's also the cultural factors, but there is a need for us to communicate, to educate ourselves, to educate our communities, and the educators as part of the communities also need to be informed and educated about it. The second part for me is having access to schools that are geared to look after kids who are struggling, whether in primary or high school. Because when I took my child out of mainstream school, the only school that the medical professionals recommended was in Nelspruit. And that's because the schools around Joburg, where it's people struggling with mental health, you have people struggling with drug abuse, alcohol abuse, etc. So I needed a place or a school that, or an environment that will be or that's suitable for a child who's still of school going age. And the costs of that school, I could not afford it as a parent. And I can only imagine for other parents out there. So for me, we talk about prevention. In terms of prevention, we need to make sure that these conversations, we're having them at schools, we're having them at primary schools. Because my daughter, her first attempt, she was 7 years old. So let's not assume that kids are young, they don't know. We should not expose them to information and knowledge about mental health. It would actually be empowering, because had my daughter been empowered, either for myself or from the schools, she probably would not have resorted to attempting to take her own life. And in our community churches or religious gatherings, we need to make sure that we talk about it. Let's not perpetuate the stigma around mental health. We need to make sure that we create a space where people can raise their hands and say, I'm struggling with depression. I'm struggling with anxiety. I understand that the natural order is to say, go and pray. But we don't say that to someone who's having an asthma attack. Why are we saying that for someone who is struggling with mental illness? And lastly for me, it's the policymakers, the Council of Medical Schemes, the medical aides. They need to relook at 30 days for me was not enough. We struggled to even find the medication. My daughter was unresponsive to medication. We went as far as electroconvulsive therapy. And my daughter had to be discharged the same day that she had ECT, because the medical aid case manager said, unfortunately, we're not going to cover you from this day going forward. And that is unfortunate that I, as a parent, have to go through that. It rendered me powerless. I feel that the government has failed me. The policymakers have failed me. The medical schemes have failed me. And we have to do better. We need to do better. We need to save our children, we need to save our communities, and importantly, corporates and public sector. Corporates have, ICARES as one of the examples, example. You can't just direct the person to say, make a phone call to ICARES, and that's where my obligation ends. Corporates are built on people. Those people are suffering. What is it that corporates are actually doing to make sure that they empower their employees so that those employees are able to look after the loved ones who are struggling.
Well, Itzani, that's an incredible point. I want to just continue with that again after our ad break, and then we're going to wrap up the show. And I'd like from both of you just some advice that we can start giving to people, how they can start to address this and support those in their communities.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 Chai FM. I've been chatting to two fantastic guests. We've been talking mental health and suicide prevention, as it's Suicide Prevention Month. I just wanted to say to both of you, my guests, that I'm incredibly grateful for what you have shared and for your time today, because suicide and mental health, suicide is something that is ultimately preventable, because it's a very permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I'm incredibly grateful that I didn't pull the trigger at that time when I really didn't know another way out. But I didn't know another way out because I really wasn't educated enough about the options that were available to me. And going into a treatment program and into a rehab, that taught me the skills that I needed to function. And Ruludzani, I love your point also about corporates and the things, and the also from the professor, the lack of support from the medical schemes. And I think what I've seen in South Africa, what we're really good at, when we don't get the support we need from government, we tend to do it ourselves as individuals and as those in the private sector, and ultimately, hopefully, the medical schemes. If I could ask each of you, just as a closing point, just to give a little, share a little bit to enable those who may be struggling and to enable those to support those who may be struggling. Professor, if I could start with you.
We live in a very troubled society. We witness and see violence happening physically and otherwise. We live in a society where we have the highest unemployment rate and the lowest employment rate in the world. Our statistics are just crazy statistics. And based on what the WHO, World Health Organization, estimates, at least 3 out of 4 people in our country have a psychological issue, a mental health issue impacting them. To be able to understand the common mental health issues is very important, so that we can when we know, if I'm feeling X, if I'm doing Y, I'm not doing this, it equips you to be a better person. It equips you with options. Right now, we don't have that in our education, in our cultural, religious, sporting, and public spaces, including all kinds of work and professions. So the result is many of us have diabetes. We end up with bad habits. We end up with high blood pressure and cardiac issues and so on. Environmentally, you can become a risk for cancer because of the things that are happening. So all these are intertwined. It's not as if you get X, you can deal with it in this way. It is our living spaces that are infested with this. Right. So let's try to understand and take relief in sharing information and asking, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. You
know? And how did you manage?
Thank you, Professor.
It opens the door.
Absolutely. And I think that I love that point. Just ask and just talk. Thank you so much, Professor. Ruludzani, and your last closing point, we've got about 30 seconds left. You are on mute.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Let's not underestimate the power of community. As a community, we need to come together. For us to get rid of the stigma, we need to talk about it. We need to educate ourselves and each other. We need to create space where we can openly discuss it. That's the last words for myself.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. To my guests, Professor Seth Cooper, MD, and to author of Navigating the Storm, A Parent's Journey Through Mental Health Challenges, launching her book this coming weekend, Vuletsane Dangale, thank you so much for your time. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 Chai FM. You are not alone. Ask for help and ask someone how they're doing.